Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Quick Hits, Authors at the Ector. Odessa Arts recently announced the launch of Authors at the Ector. Following David Sedaris' event from October, Odessa native Elizabeth Wetmore will discuss her debut novel, Valentine, at 7 p.m. today at the Ector Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue. For tickets or more information, visit odessaarts.org/authors. Live debates. Basin PBS has scheduled 4 upcoming debates happening live from the Anwar Family Studio at Basin PBS. Candidates will take to the Basin PBS studio floor for a 1-hour debate each. The community is encouraged to submit questions for each debate via the Basin PBS Facebook page. Basin PBS will ask as many questions as they are able. Moderators for the debate are Becky Ferguson, Basin PBS board member, Pat Canty, publisher of the Odessa American, and Emily Holiva, president of the League of Women's Voters in Midland. Thursday, 7 p.m., Ector County judge candidates Debbie Hayes, Justin Fawcett. Monday, 7 p.m., Texas House of Representatives, District 81 candidates Casey Gray and Brooks Landgraf. In addition to their broadcast on Basin PBS, each debate will stream on the Basin PBS Facebook page and on basinpbs.org. Follow Basin PBS on Facebook for more news, events, and programming. Facebook.com/BasinPBS. Annual Midessa Boat, RV Sport, and Gun Show. The 40th annual Midessa Boat, RV Sport, and Gun Show has been scheduled from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. February 13th at the Ector County Coliseum Complex, Buildings A, B, C, D, E, and G, 4201 Andrews Highway. There will be guns, a variety of booths including resort areas, jewelry, ladies' apparel, motorcycles, ATVs, food decor, specialty foods, kayaks, boats, and RVs. Army Bass Anglers Kids Fishing Tank, sponsored by All-American Chevrolet of Odessa, will be available for the kids. Register to win door prizes from various vendors. A free tram will be provided to transport people from building to building. All exhibits are inside. Admission is $7 for adults, $5 for seniors, and $3 for children ages 3 to 7. Ladies free from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday. Visit MidessaBoatShow.com. Father-Daughter Dance. Dance Connection, 2031 Andrews Highway, has scheduled a father-daughter dance for all ages from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday. Tickets are $10 per person. Visit tinyurl.com/2p86ndwa. Love Without Limits, Stonegate Fellowship Church, 6000 West Wadley Avenue, Midland, has scheduled Love Without Limits, a royal gala for ages 14 and older from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Friday. Admission is free. Registration is required. To register or for more information, visit tinyurl.com/2p8n8wz3. Gaither Music Group. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM 1788 Midland, has scheduled a Gaither Music Group at 6 p.m. Friday. Doors open at 5 p.m. For tickets or more information, visit wagnernoel.com. Speed Dating Night. Rooster's Diner, 615 North Sam Houston Avenue, has scheduled a speed dating night for singles ages 25 to 45 from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Friday. Only 16 spots, 8 women and 8 men, are available. Cost is $20 a person. Complimentary glass of wine and appetizers will be provided. To RSVP, call 432-413-3000. 3016, or for more information, visit tinyurl.com/yck49rjy. Voters hear from those seeking offices. Rodriguez, a no-show for Norris Forum. Voters in Precinct 4 got a chance to hear from different candidates during a free forum Tuesday night at the Woodson Center, hosted by the Gavin Norris Law Office. Justice of the Peace Precinct 4 candidates Elizabeth Baez, Jesse Porras, and Alford Littleton took questions from a moderator as well as a few from the audience. Savannah Morales, who is running for Ector County Precinct 4 commissioner seat in the Democratic primary, also spoke and took questions at the event. Incumbent Armando Rodriguez did not attend. Democrat Luke Warford, who is running for a seat on the Texas Railroad Commission, was also present at the forum. Their primaries will be taking place on March 1st. Early voting begins Monday and will last until February 25th. The event started with Warford speaking to the audience. The 32-year-old former Texas Democratic Party staffer is challenging Republican incumbent Wayne Christian. Warford began the evening by asking how many people in the audience had lost power during last year's winter storm in February. "I live in Austin. It got to 30 degrees in my apartment, and we had it pretty good compared to a lot of folks during the storm last year," Warford said. "There was billions of dollars wasted. It comes back to why I'm running. Fundamentally, one of the main reasons why I'm running for Texas Railroad Commission is I just got frustrated after the grid failure last year. I learned that the Texas Railroad Commission, which regulates the Texas oil and gas industry, knew that from the 2011 storm that our gas producers were susceptible to failure if the temperatures got too cold. They could have prevented it from happening, and they didn't. They didn't do their jobs. The result was the grid failure and hundreds of people losing their lives. I'm running for Texas Railroad Commission because we need someone who has a vision and who understands from an economic background where our economy comes from and where it's going and what the future of Texas energy looks like. We need someone who's going to do everything in their power to keep the lights on." Morales is running against Rodriguez, who is running for his fifth term. Morales is seeking her first political office. "There are a lot of people who don't know that there's help out there for them," Morales said. "We have to be able to provide that. To me, a true leader doesn't sit on the seat. You have to get off your seat and go and see what your precinct needs. It's not about budgeting. It's more than that. You have to lead and get out there. That's something I want to do. I want to fight for our precinct." One of the questions Morales took was about representation issues and how she plans to fix that. "I'm a people person," Morales said. "I love talking to people. I love talking one-on-one. But if we can sit down and talk to the other commissioners and see eye to eye, I feel like I'm able to sit there and talk to both parties and negotiate things to do better. I don't have all the perfect answers, but I'm willing to go in there and get what I need to get to improve this precinct." The winner of the March election between Morales and Rodriguez will go up against Billy Hall, who is running unopposed in the Republican primary. The rest of the evening just belonged to the Justice of the Peace Precinct 4 candidates. The Justice of the Peace Precinct 4 race will be a winner-take-all in March since there are no Republican candidates running. The race will determine who replaces the current Justice of the Peace Precinct 4, Eddie Spivey, who is retiring. The Justice of the Peace candidates were asked why they were seeking the office. "The reason that I have dealt with the community on a one-on-one basis," Porras said. "I understand about making decisions. I've understood that while serving in the Marine Corps. This is something I want to do for community." Baeza said this is a position she has dreamed of having. "When I started my career, Spivey was my neighborhood. I got to work with Spivey as well as the other precincts. I told him I wanted his seat one of these days. I'm staying true to my word. 21 years has taught me to serve in Precinct 4. I think I have a great repertoire with the community. I think it's time to be the judge that they can come to. Littleton said he had grown up wanting to serve. My experience in business and working with people one-on-one, I have a passion with treating people fairly, Littleton said. That passion has driven me to compete for justice of the peace. I will help you solve that problem. I'll be available. Another question that was asked of the candidates was their experiences and whether that would hurt or help. None of the Justice of Peace Precinct 4 candidates have held an elective office before. Doing the events and being a part of the community as I have and will continue, the best thing I can do is understand what the community needs, Poros, who owns Auto Oasis, said. Baeza is a masterpiece officer. All that I have dealt with for the last 21 years has prepared me for the job that the Justice Court deals with on a daily basis, Baeza said. Littleton is an Intertech PSI lab technician. None of us can talk about our resumes as far as JP experience, Littleton said. We can rely on life experiences. We've all had interesting lives. I can talk about experience where I've had to make good and bad decisions. I've made decisions that I always thought were fair. You can't show favoritism. What you can do is have some empathy and resolve some issues. You have to be available and ready to help them. There are so many things that I've done that I think have helped me. Woman arrested in connection to elderly abuse. Odessa American Media Partners, CBS 7, reported that a 53-year-old woman was arrested at Deering Nursing Home on Tuesday afternoon for an outstanding warrant for abuse of an elderly person that happened at a different nursing home. Catherine Cobb was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on Tuesday, jail records show. She was indicted by an Ector County grand jury on April 19th for injury to an elderly person, a third-degree felony. According to court records, the injury to an elderly person happened on February 10th, where she intentionally and knowingly caused bodily injury to 65-year-old Pablo Rodriguez by striking him on or about his head or face with her hand. Cobb has one bond totaling $20,000 and was still in custody as of Wednesday afternoon, jail records show. Judge, commissioner candidates answer questions. For about an hour and a half, candidates vying for Ector County Judge and Ector County Commissioner Precinct 2 answered questions in front of about 75 people during a forum at the Odessa Country Club. It featured incumbents Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes and Ector County Commissioner for Precinct 2, Greg Simmons. Hayes' challenger is Dustin Fawcett, while Simmons' challenger included Ryan Patton and Billy Tripp. The questions asked to all candidates range from detailing items on the agenda to public comment during commissioner meetings to fire and EMS services provided by the City of Odessa to the county, to certificates of obligation, to health care, to inmates at the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. The City of Odessa does provide that service, but the county pays the city $775,000 a year for that service, so it's not a free service, Hayes said, while she was talking about fire and EMS services provided by the City of Odessa to Ector County. There's also services the county provides to the city. Fawcett said many of the interlocal agreements between the county and city need to be revisited. Since we've had new commissioners and new city council, we haven't had a joint commissioners and city council meeting, Fawcett said. We should all be on the same page. Simmons used his extra time to talk about certificates of obligation. The debt issuance that we did was important for the community, Simmons said. It was important for the kids that we need to take care of and for the public that we need to protect. Patton spoke about the need for communication between the county, the public, and the city of Odessa. We have to come together and work together for the taxpayer, Patton said when he spoke about interlocal agreements between the county and city. We can't fight one another and think we are going to have good agreements to take care of the citizens. Tripp referenced the need for checks and balances numerous times during his answers. We need better management to how funds are distributed, Tripp said. I think that certificates of obligation, the public needs to be involved to some extent, but we can at least have some town hall meetings and forums. The forum also had members of the audience ask questions that included Wollaston asking how long each had been a Republican and when was the last time they voted for a Democrat. Odessan Chris Crow asked Hayes and Simmons about whether they stand by their decisions to use certificates of obligation for the Ector County Youth Center. I still stand by that decision, Hayes said, and elaborated on why it's taking so long for the new youth center to be built, which her answer was COVID. Trust me, I wish we had already broken ground and there was already a structure coming up because we know we need that center. Simmons added, as far as I would do things differently, I would probably want to clarify more information from our director from the juvenile center before moving forward. But that was the best information that we had at that time. Obituaries, February 10th. Donald Alford. Donald Alford, age 72, died Sunday, February 6th in Crane. Donald was born March 7th, 1949 in Odessa to the parentage of Hardy and Marjorie Alford, Sr. Donald is preceded in death by his parents, three brothers, Hardy Alford, Jr., Johnny Joe Alford and Alvin Ray Alford, two sisters, Molly Durham and Rose Whitfield. He is survived by his wife, Marilyn Alford, sons Donald Alford, Jr. and Dvorak Alford of Odessa, daughters Taronda Alford and Chanda George of Odessa, brothers Jackie Ray Alford of Odessa, 13 grandchildren and 6 great-grandchildren, and many other relatives and friends. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guestbook at www.sunsetodessa.com. Zineida Almodova Munoz. Zineida Almodova Munoz, 87, was taken to heaven on February 5th from Odessa. A memorial service will be held on Friday, February 11th at Martinez Funeral Home at 3 to 6 p.m. Zineida Neya Munoz was born in Alpine, Texas to Alberto Almodova and Cornelia Sanchez on June 5, 1934. Zineida is preceded in death by her parents, her husband, Samuel Munoz, Sr., sons Samuel Munoz, Jr., brothers Alberto Almodova, Jr., Daniel Almodova, and Ubaldo Luna, Jr., and great-granddaughter Sadie Lee Ann Munoz. She is survived by her children, Almando Munoz, Terry, Norma Munoz, Irma Esparza, and Aiden Leha, Mary. Sisters, Badilia Ramirez, Maria Gonzalez, and Christina Sanchez. 12 grandchildren and 30 great-grandchildren. Her service is under the direction of Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory. Lyndall Ray Putty, Odessa. Lyndall Ray Putty, 65, of Odessa, passed away at Medical Center Hospital on January 30th after a brief illness. He was born October 19, 1956 in Waco to Jackie L. and Sue Putty. Lyndall is survived by his mother, Sue Patty of Odessa, loving stepson, Chris Sarongo, and family of Midland, sisters Becky Thorpe and husband Terry of Odessa, and Janet Mitchell of San Angelo, and several nieces and nephews. Lyndall was preceded in death by his wife, Tricia Putty, father Jackie L. Putty, grandparents Durant and Valley Putty, and Maynard and Clara Cobb and numerous uncles, aunts, and cousins. In lieu of flowers and in honor of Lindell's giving nature, the family asks that you pay it forward and lend a hand to someone in need, whether that be a kind word, a kind deed, or a monetary donation. A memorial service will be held Friday, February 11th at 2 p.m. at Acres West Funeral Home. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel in Odessa. Condolences to the family may be made to the family online at acreswestfuneral.com. Death notices. Keithel Ray Broadstreet. Keithel Ray Broadstreet, 87, of Odessa, died February 4th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. February 15th at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Adelina Quarter Lopez. Adelina Quarter Lopez, 52, of Odessa, died Friday, February 4th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. Friday, February 11th at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Cremation will follow at a later date. Father Frank Chavez is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Carlos Hernandez Sanchez, Jr., Odessa. Carlos Hernandez Sanchez, Jr., 70, of Odessa, died Tuesday, February 1st in Odessa, Texas. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. Friday, February 11th at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow from 2 to 3 in Saragossa, Texas, at Saragossa Cemetery. Father Mark Woodruff is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, February 5, 2022. Viewpoints. Questions for the candidates. We have heard a lot about 3-2 votes keeping people from accomplishing certain goals. What will you do to keep county government headed in a positive direction, even if you fall on the wrong side of 3-2 votes? Terry Johnson, County Judge Candidate. Midland County in better place, even with 3-2 votes. We've all heard the adage that the only way to eat an elephant is one bite at a time. I ran for county judge in 2018 because what the politicians were telling us just didn't square. They told us that the horseshoe boosted economic development. It doesn't. They told us that they were being fiscally responsible with your money. They weren't. They even told us there was no waste in county government when there absolutely was. They told there was no fraud in county government and, well, you know. It only took a few weeks as county judge to learn that Midland County was a big elephant. We had and still have amazing employees, but the past system was often slow to respond. It had habits that were hard to break. Protecting the status quo was the highest priority, and in some cases, as we're learning with the horseshoe contract, the establishment didn't always work in the interest of the taxpayers. Undoing a system like that is hard work and often resulted in 3-2 votes. But let me be clear, winning the most votes doesn't mean you are right on the issue. It just means that you won the most votes that time. 3-2 votes generate headlines and news stories, but over the last 3 years, we've taken quite a few bites out of that elephant, and 3-2 votes, while still common, have shifted toward doing the right thing, not the political thing. Let me give you a few of the successful bites we've taken during my time as the Midland County Judge. Waste, fraud, and abuse. Midland County has a fleet management contract that, in past years, the county auditor was instructed not to audit. At my urging, we conducted an audit and discovered that millions of dummy invoices had been issued to the county and paid. We've recovered that money. Road management. Today, we have a senior level special projects coordinator who manages all phases of road planning, construction, and engineering. When I originally presented this idea, it was voted down 3-2. We now have a road management system led by a highly trained professional. Transparency. Today, we have a public information officer who can keep the public informed and respond to media requests in a timely manner. When I originally presented this idea, it was voted down 3-2. As a county commission, we've also come to learn where each of us stands on an issue. This has been helpful in creating initiatives that we can agree on, resulting in a few 5-0 votes and several 4-1 votes. Some of the 4-1 with me being the dissenter and some with one particular commissioner dissenting. For example, fiscal management. We have shifted your tax dollars from building new buildings and other legacy things we don't need to spending $50 million a year on resurfacing and rebuilding county roads. Intergovernmental relations. We have established a new relationship with the City of Midland that allows us to work together on public safety and infrastructure projects that will keep taxes low. Public safety. Although there is still more work to be done, I have wholeheartedly supported Sheriff Kreiner and our first responders' efforts to build one of the strongest sheriff's departments in Midland County's history. I didn't just move to Midland 5 years ago like my opponent. I'm a lifelong Midlander. I've built a business here, creating jobs for our community, paid untold property taxes for more than 45 years. And I can confidently say that Midland County is in better shape than it was a short 3 years ago, even with 3-2's votes. We operate better. We are safer. Our tax rate remains one of the lowest in the state, and we are serving the taxpayers better than we ever have. These have been done without raising taxes, just reprioritizing our efforts. Should the voters choose to give me a second term as their Midland County judge and elect a commissioner's court that is passionate about looking out for the interests of the taxpayer, we can build a county that is more efficient, more effective, serves well while keeping taxes low. I am asking for your vote beginning on February 14. Robin Donnelly, Precinct 2 candidate. What really matters is the work done after the voting. I represent approximately 42,000 voters. Each voter has given me the duty and obligation to represent their interests in governance of the county. The constitutional duties of the county are being accomplished in conjunction with all 26 elected officials of the county. Trials are being conducted by the district courts, county courts at law, and justice of the peace courts. The district attorney's office is prosecuting criminal and transgressors cases. The sheriff's office is maintaining the jail and providing law enforcement services. The district clerk and the county clerk are providing for efficient filing of suits, vital records, and land records. Elections are being conducted. The commissioners are diligently working to maintain the road system in the county. The commissioner's court is providing the necessary resources for all these departments through administering the taxes in accordance with its budget that is passed each year. So, what creates a vote that is not unanimous? Issues. What are the issues, and why would a majority vote for an issue? Is the issue to which individuals on the court take as personal issue, or was the issue one that the majority of the court felt was in the best interest of the citizens and taxpayers of the county? Look at the issues. I have been on the winning and losing side of votes by the commissioner's court. I lost on hiring a Washington, D.C. lobbyist. I won on putting dirt in the arena for the Midland County Livestock Show. I will win and lose in the future. I respectfully follow the court's decision and then, if possible, work on that issue with the majority of the court or at least not work against the desire of the majority of the court. My concern on issues is the question, has the issue been fully explored, discussed, explained, and have both sides of the issue been fully brought to light and debated before the public and commissioner's court? In conclusion, we must look back at the issues brought before the commissioner's court. In a similar way to what Henry Olson said in a recent column, dogmatic intolerance never goes down with a democratic people, as Ronald Reagan gently reminded ideological conservatives in 1977. The more progressivism resembles medical Catholicism in its intolerance of dissent, the more likely American democracy will produce Democrats' worst nightmares, Republican rule as far as the eye can see. Intolerance on any level can create unwanted results. Diane Anderson, Precinct 4 candidate. A new perspective goes beyond vote count. My goal is to work with all of the other county commissioners and the county judge for the benefit of our Midland community, Midland County, and Precinct 4. County government is a democratic institution. We know that 100% agreement all the time is not possible. It is important to listen, research the issue or issues being discussed, find out what my constituents' thoughts are on various matters, and represent their views. If the subject is contentious, try to find a middle ground. Where there are disagreements, the important considerations here are to focus intently on the other commissioners' views and try to achieve unanimity in the progress of our Midland community. If we cannot achieve that, I will certainly abide by any decision of the commissioners' court in which I have a minority opinion. Therefore, my promise is to listen, be accessible, and be transparent. I look forward to providing a new perspective to the court. Randy Prude, Precinct 4 candidate. Division revolves around the horseshoe. I vote on issues, not personal vendettas or personality conflicts. What's best for all citizens of Midland County is paramount in my decision-making. Until the last 3 years, we have carried out the county's business with collegial respect and have been unanimous in 99%+ of all our votes. The county judge for 20 years did not make motions nor vote except to break a tie, which may have happened only once, but I don't remember the reason for that one occasion. For 3 years, our main differences, resulting in 3-2 votes, concerned the horseshoe, wherein the 3 conservative Republicans opposed the judge and the lone court Democrat. We believe that the horseshoe and its former managers, the Dooleys, and now Joe Kelly, are a huge success and a shining gem on the West Texas horizon. More than 1 million visitors have voted with their feet, their agreement with us, by attendance and glowing compliments on the commissioner's decision to build this fantastic facility and the management teams who make every event a wonderful and repeated yearly success. We built a facility that outshines our competitors in West Texas in that we are debt-free and have run in the black for the last 8 years to the tune of more than $1 million. In addition, a study published by a nation rating service has pointed out that the horseshoe has brought in more than $50 million to our local economy. And on top of that, a little known fact that most Midlanders don't know is that Walmart was in contact with former county judge Mike Bradford, waiting to see if we were going to pull the trigger on the horseshoe construction. Once they knew it was a go, they decided to build their new Walmart on the southeast location in Midland, which in turn has caused more than $250 million in new developments in the area. Now it appears that 3 candidates are joining the false narrative about the horseshoe management being a flop in unison with the 2 side of our 3-2 votes. I'm proud of my 2 colleagues who have kept the Horseshoe as a major beacon of success for our great community. Charles Hall, Precinct 4 candidate. Our votes should represent taxpayers. 3-2 votes are pretty much the norm in Midland County. The bottom line is we need to be voting for the taxpayers' interest, not special interest groups, as we have seen happen in the past. I will listen attentively to the taxpayers and respond accordingly after careful consideration, realizing that my vote may not be the popular vote, but what is the best for the county overall. Still to come, February 12. Is it your expectation that the county will have to hold a bond election to build a new law enforcement facilities or have another election to raise the sales tax for more revenue? Jonna Smoot, County Judge Candidate. County Judge should honor votes, not promote division. While I have no interest in belaboring the ways Terry Johnson has failed Midland County voters, it is time his record of going against the grain, against his word, and against voters' wishes is noted. The Reporter-Telegram's question of how I will keep county government headed in a positive direction, even if I fall on the wrong side of a 3-2 vote, is pivotal. Regarding, are the 3-2 votes keeping the current county judge from accomplishing certain goals? I note the words 3-2 rhyme with me against you and follow Terry Johnson's political trajectory. Mr. Johnson ran on a Republican ticket, knowing that was his best opportunity to win a countywide race, and has since turned his term in office into a largely personal agenda and a vendetta against the county-owned Horseshoe facility. Perusing Terry Johnson's 2018 campaign promises, the majority of the simple promises he made have simply not been kept. MRT Voters Guide, February 2, 2018. Terry Johnson has freely shared his personal agenda regarding wanting his personal business to benefit, along with his personal nonprofit to be better benefited by him being in office. KCRS, December 30, 2021, radio interview, and many other recent speaking engagements. During his reign, Terry Johnson regularly voted against the three conservative commissioners while boasting and posting on social media his 3-2 imagery, for which he created commemorative stickers. Terry Johnson's social media posts. County judges, while having the ability to vote at commissioner's court, traditionally only vote to break a tie. Judges who choose to vote regularly are considered activist judges. Terry Johnson appears to vote to create division. Terry Johnson holds an office that, in addition to reporting to every Midland County taxpayer, also should work in conjunction with the Texas legislature as an arm of the state. To that end, Terry Johnson shunned going through established, proper, and ordinary channels of representing Midland County at the state level when he looked elsewhere for assistance in doing his job. At taxpayer expense, Terry Johnson had Midland County contract with a Washington, D.C. lobbying firm to represent Midland County interests to bring unidentified and alleged possible additional funds from Washington, D.C. to Midland County. Terry Johnson did not go through any of the local Republican groups for assistance on the alleged funds, nor did he even look to our state representative, Tom Craddock, to represent us. Rather than building local consensus and going through established Republican channels, Terry Johnson went through a group located in the swamp of Washington, D.C. to represent Midland County, Texas. To date, Midland County has seen no tangible benefit from this Washington, D.C. arrangement. The above are just a few examples of why a county judge choosing to vote 3-2 on a regular basis is not for the benefit of anyone, especially not for Midland County. I began my campaign at the suggestion of community leaders who wished to see Midland County raised up by its leadership. rather than dragged down by constant spate of negativism tied to a personal agenda. Having provided background on Terry Johnson's leadership, here's my vision of Midland County leadership. I have neither a personal business nor a personal nonprofit that I wish to benefit from due to my becoming Midland County's next county judge. Should my vote fall on the short side of 3-2, I will know the majority of the court voted to represent the wishes of their constituents, and I will do my best to honor, not vilify, that result. I work at a local community bank and have agreed to step down from my position upon winning the election to focus on best serving Midland County's voters. During a recent debate, my opponent stated the county judge position is a full-time position and that he planned on giving the county his full 100% attention were he to be reelected. Mr. Johnson was unclear as to whether he meant that, like me, he would focus on best serving Midland County by not having other employment obligations. I have spent many years in operations and finance, and with my business management degree, I understand how important it is to be consistent, credible, and contributing to a community. Having served, led, guided, and assisted many Midland County nonprofits, I have a deep understanding of Midland's diverse citizens and its needs. Professionally trained to operate in a compliance-oriented environment, I have a Green Belt certification, aerospace environment, and am able to work through complex and challenging issues. To those who ask about the biggest differences between me and Terry Johnson, I suggest you review our social media to determine which of us will best represent Midland in a professional, dignified, and consensus-building manner. I am Jonna Smoot, running for county judge, and am humbly asking for your vote March 1, so that I may be your servant leader, because Midland matters. Jeff Somers, Precinct 2 candidate, cohesive board essential to success of Midland County. For the life of me, I can't understand the 3-2 voting issue. The commissioner's court was put in place to lead, guide, and ultimately direct the functions of the county. All the residents of the county rely on the court to make qualified, educated decisions to move the county in a positive direction. The people of the county vote in each commissioner with a 4-year term and vote them out if the guidance is lacking and poor decisions are being made. With that being said, it brings us to the point we are at today and why changes are needed. There are several things that can be done to influence the voting to where more unanimous decisions come from the court, and these things need to be done immediately. To continue to move the county forward, we need to get the right people in place. I strongly believe this upcoming election will make those changes. Solid people within this community are stepping up and speaking up about changes that are much needed, and I believe the residents will respond by voting for change. How can this court be this divided? How can decisions being made with 3-2 results possibly be the best decisions for the residents of this county? I personally believe there are deep-rooted issues within the current court that must be changed. I have been a member of the Greenwood ISD School Board for almost 12 years, and I can't recall one vote that wasn't unanimous. Do we all think exactly alike? Do we all 100% agree all the time? The answer is no. But what we do is discuss the topic and come to an agreement before the vote is taken. As a result, there are unanimous votes one after another. Everyone has their chance to state their points and voice their opinions. But at the end of the day, we each agree on what is best for the kids at the school and the people of the community. Everyone gets on the same page, and we move forward as a very cohesive board. This is team building 101. If the residents of the community give me the privilege to serve as a county commissioner, I will serve on the side of conservative leadership and conservative values. I will serve on the side of consistent decision-making based on those values and never divert. Lastly, I will serve on the side of commitment to the people of Midland County to ensure this county makes needed progress in the years to come. If these are the qualities you look for in a county leader and are tired of the 3-2 votes we continue to see with our current court, please vote Jeff Sommers on March 1.
Hello, friends. This is Julie reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, February 6, 2022. Attorney Gives Back to Community by Ruth Campbell. From rough and humble beginnings, attorney Gavin Norris has made a name for himself and a success in his life. Norris lived in 3 foster homes and 3 children's shelters, and with 2 different sets of relatives, all between the time he was 4 and 8 years old. When he talks of young people, he tells them about his early life because he wants them to know he didn't grow up with a silver spoon in his mouth. I give them the quote from Langston Hughes. Life for me hasn't been a crystal stair. I give them that story so that whenever you come from, if you really have the right support and you're determined, you can do what you want, Norris said. Norris and 2 other siblings were adopted by their grandparents, the Reverend Curtis Norris and Annie Pearl Norris. Reverend Norris pastored the House of Prayer Baptist Church and also has a barber shop, and Annie Pearl Norris had a hat shop. He had 3 sisters and 2 brothers, but grew up with an older brother and a younger sister. He didn't connect with his other family members until right before he went to law school in 2011. I grew up poor. There were times we were homeless. I remember times where we lived where we didn't have lights, where family members traded welfare benefits for electricity or for a bath. I remember every foster home that we lived in, every children's shelter that we lived in, the plans that me and my siblings had of how we were going to stick together or run away, Norris recalled. Those have never left, but those are things that made us who I am. And those are things that really pushed me to make sure that I'd give back to other kids, because there are so many kids who go through that and just don't know. There are a lot of kids in my situation who haven't made it out and didn't have the resources or people who love them. It's really a message of hope and encouragement. Hopefully, and then a responsibility to give back once you attain what you want to attain, he added. Born and raised in Odessa, Norris graduated from Permian High School. He finished his bachelor's degree at University of Texas, Permian Basin. He participated in Archer Fellowship Program and then went to Texas Southern University for his law degree. He got the idea to become an attorney when he was a senior in high school and got into an argument with his math teacher. We back and forth, and she said, "You know, you should be a lawyer. You're wrong, but you should be." That's really kind of planting the seed, Norris said. He added that there were a lot of students interested in law at the time. Out of the group of people he hung out with there, everybody ended up going to law school. Most of them are practicing. Some are trial lawyers, others are transactional, and some have gone into oil and gas law. Returning to Odessa after law school was a God thing, Norris said. I wasn't trying to come back when I finished law school, and we took the bar that summer. Most places in Houston, where I was, wanted you to have your license before you started working. I'd had a great internship. I'd interned with BP and ExxonMobil, but they didn't graduate you a job without passing the bar. So I came here. The Permian offered me a job to teach there, Norris said. I was teaching juniors and seniors economics and government, and so I taught that year and then started my law practice when I got my bar results. My practice just kind of picked up and went on from there, he added. His first trial was against the late Tom Hirsch. He kicked my butt all across the courtroom, up and down, every which way. My client was threatened to be put in jail by the judge. It was bad, so I had a little chip on my shoulder, Norris said. The next thing I had, we won. We went for almost a year without losing any cases. That got my name out there, and people started coming in. The business just built from there. It wasn't the plan to stay, but I think it was God's plan, he added. The teaching job helped Norris get readjusted to the Permian. He added that it also helped him develop patience when dealing with clients. But if you can deal with a junior and senior high school kid, you can probably deal with anybody. Those are the things that have helped me the most. Right after that, when I finished, I actually was assistant county attorney in Upton County. And so the job at Permian really helped make a launch pad for me to be able to do all these things and other things, he said. Teaching also prompted him to help young people. While I was there at Permian because of my legal expertise and school credentials, I was able to help quite a few students, help them get out of trouble, and even help work with some of the administration on a few issues, Norris said. That led to defending students, particularly in sports with University Interscholastic League issues, and to future clients. Moore's main practice area are family law, including divorce, child custody, child support, and adoptions. They do probate and estate planning, including matters such as wills and estate planning and probating wills and estates. The practice also represents some oil and gas companies. At any given time, he has 400 to 500 active clients and five people in the practice. Family law is the busiest right now. It's interesting because probate was really our bread and butter for the first 4 years. And then about 3 years ago, we just switched and family just took off. I think we've made a name for ourselves, that we take care of clients because we do very little advertising, Norse said. He added that 95% of his business is word of mouth. And now, because of COVID, it's people seeing us in court on Facebook, Norse said. In 2019, in addition to his private practice, Norris began working as the staff attorney for the Crisis Center of West Texas, where he prosecutes cases of family violence for men, women, and children victims of family violence cases of sexual assault and human and sex trafficking. CCWTX started his legal program in 2019, and it's still growing today, he said. His practice mainly before the 446th District Court Judge, Sir Kate Billingsley. From watching him practice, Norris says people can tell he cares about his clients and will fight for them. Some people watch court all day in the parts of the state. Norris also has fans. A woman came up to him at the Permian sporting event recently, asked him who he was to make sure, and said she was fan-crushing. That happens quite a bit, and I'm sure with all the other attorneys that happens as well, he said. Norris and his wife Candace have been married for almost 7 years. They have two golden doodles. Candace Norris is from Odessa, too, has a Juris Doctor degree, and works in the legal field. She'll be taking the bar this summer, he said. The Norrises ran in the same circle of friends and church, but never met each other. She finished her senior year at TCU. She graduated early, and I was finishing at UTPB, Norris said. They met at a fashion show, started dating, and dated through college. They went to law school together and tied the knot right after they graduated. Norris said he feels it is his responsibility to give back to the community that has given so much to him. He often mentors young men and women lawyers. He can't take resources from the community and not put back, or we'll leave our community devastated. It's really a responsibility to be able to give back, and I believe that saying that, to whom much is given, much is required. I tell my staff that all the time. We're blessed to be where we are. We're blessed to have the opportunity to have the business we have, Norris said. He added that his grandfather and the church taught him about service to others. If I ever leave West Texas, I want it to be better because I was here, and I think that would be the legacy that I want to leave, Norris said. Norris would like to expand his law office. There's a difference between a law office and a law firm. We're looking to expand to have a multi-lawyer firm, a multi-practice area. There are a few other practice areas that we want to get into, which is immigration, municipal law. We're looking to expand and bring some new lawyers in here and just really build the firm. There aren't any mid-size or large minority-owned firms here in the area. That's the other legacy I'd like to leave and create a minority-owned law firm that can help represent the minority community, Norris said. Judge Billingsley is definitely a fan of Norris. Jay-Z once said regarding his nerves about performing at Madison Square Garden that he didn't want to be successful, he wanted to be relevant. In my opinion, Gavin Norris shares that mindset with Mr. Carter, Billingsley said. Jay-Z was born Sean
Hydrocele of the scrotum. Dear Dr. Roach, I was diagnosed with a hydrocele of the scrotum. How dangerous is this and what can be done about it? E. Answer. A hydrocele is a common and usually benign condition of fluid buildup inside the scrotum. It usually doesn't cause any symptoms, and if it doesn't, then it doesn't need treatment. Surgery can be done for the occasional man with symptoms that are bad enough to warrant surgery. Many men with a hydrocele worry about fertility, but this is not usually affected.
Rallies and meetings to have hard conversations where everyone leaves both heard and respected. He is almost always smiling, making others laugh. Gavin shares positivity and light, many times when others are not. Gavin has shown that he is more than a one-hit wonder. He is a man of faith, a fierce advocate for his clients, a loyal friend, a consistent student, a loving husband, a patient and humble servant, and a strong and most capable leader, she said.
This is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, February 10th. Woman can no longer support sister's decisions in life. Dear Abby, for years my sister has been in a relationship with a man who treats her terribly. She works full-time and comes home to find him out partying every day. I have stood by her and offered advice and a willing ear, but at this point, her problems are affecting my marriage as well as my sanity. His drug problems are getting worse, and he couldn't care less how she feels. She follows him and sits outside the places he's hanging out, which forces him to come out and talk to her. I have tried my best to get her to move on. Their kids are grown, so she can't use them as an excuse anymore. Last night, she told me she has decided to let him do what he wants, but stay with him because his health is deteriorating from his drug use. After 13 years of being her emotional support because she never makes an effort to get out, I've reached the end of my rope. I feel terrible guilt for feeling this way, but I recently had a baby, and with my new family, I no longer have the time or patience to deal with her drama. I know it may be wrong to bow out, but I need to tell her that her problems have become my problems and they're damaging me. I don't think she's ever going to draw the line. Signed, Worn Out Sis in Kentucky. Dear Worn Out, because your sister has tolerated the situation for 13 years, I too doubt she's ever going to draw the line. Had she done it years ago, it might have been the wake-up call her partner needed to sober up and straighten out. I agree it is time to step back, quit trying to solve your sister's unsolvable problems, and concentrate on ones you can solve. And when you do, do not apologize or feel guilty for doing so. It won't make you a bad sister, but an emotionally healthier one. Dear Abby, like so many others, I am on social media to stay in touch with family and a few friends. I come from a large family with more than a dozen cousins and two siblings, as well as nieces and nephews. Many of them post photos, a lot of which are about their possessions. Look at my new car, my new house, etc. And, of course, they expect you to like everything. I know, however, if I did the same thing, they would think I'm being obnoxious. Mind you, I'm not wealthy. I would like to post some photos of just the scenery, but if I did even that, I'd be looked down upon. What's the best way to handle all the likes everyone expects with the knowledge that they hold me to a different standard? Sometimes it's infuriating. Signed, Sick of Show and Tell. Dear Sick, you are entitled to post what you wish as well as to like or ignore what your relatives post online. Not everyone has the time to validate every post. If you are asked, say you don't spend as much time on the internet as they do, period, and don't apologize.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.